I'm Vicky Mochama, and this is No Little Plans, a podcast about the UN Sustainable Development Goals in Canada. Canada is getting older. And by that, I don't mean that it is over 150 years old as a country. By 2030, seniors, the group of people over the age of 65, will account for 23% of the population. Healthy aging touches all of the Sustainable Development Goals: poverty, gender inequality, resilient infrastructure, quality education, and lifelong learning, just to name a few. And yet, more and more, an internet connection is becoming an essential tool for accessing a basic quality of life. For people under the age of 65, using the internet is no big deal. 97% of people do it. And even though seniors have doubled their internet usage in the last few years, they're still lagging behind. We tend to think of aging as some kind of insurance commercial of happy older people in rocking chairs on a dock. But seniors are not just hanging out looking at sunsets, they are logging on too. And it is a deeply connected world of smartphones and apps and, well, even podcasts. The cost of getting online or even getting a cell phone plan in Canada is prohibitively high. According to a 2019 report by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, also known as the CRTC, Canadians are paying an average of $101 a month on cell phone plans. Not to mention that for many rural communities in Canada, even getting basic internet speeds still poses a challenge. Here's the tough part. The plan for this episode started in the before times, in the days and weeks before the coronavirus pandemic changed so much for so many people. The pandemic has put the lives of seniors under a spotlight. What we are finding out is that caring about seniors is not something we are doing extremely well as a country. Getting online, especially right now, can mean the difference between getting food to your house, connecting with family that's far away, and getting the information you need to stay safe.
My name is Kim Sawchuk. I'm a professor in communication studies at Concordia University in Montreal, and I direct the Aging Communication Project, or ACT. We're all working from home right now. We're all practicing, I don't like social distancing, we're practicing physical distancing from each other and hopefully maintaining social connection.
That's Professor Kim Sawchuk. She has been studying communications and aging for 20 years.
Once you are over 60, and or 65, and you're in retirement, depending on who you are, you may not be able to afford the high cost of internet in our country. And you may not be able to afford to make mistakes. You may not be able to afford to practice. So what we've been finding in our work is the ways that socioeconomic status within the seniors population, as well as education, is tied to people's ability to engage in so-called digital literacy.
Kim mentioned a term that we should get into, digital literacy. There's a couple definitions out there, but I wanted to ask her about the one that UNESCO uses. They're the United Nations cultural arm, so they'd know a thing or two about the internet. And it's a long one, but bear with me. UNESCO defines digital literacy as the ability to access, manage, understand, integrate, communicate, evaluate, and create information safely and appropriately through digital technologies for employment, decent jobs, and entrepreneurship.
I don't mind the definition because I think it's got a large scope, but my quibble with it would be that it's very instrumental. Employment, decent job, entrepreneurship. What it neglects is the idea that digital literacy is tied to communications, and communications is not only about the transmission of information, and that communications is also a kind of social ritual that we engage in on a day-to-day basis. I phone my mother every morning, especially now, and connect with her on FaceTime. My father doesn't understand how to use those tools in quite the same way, but also her role and work in the family has been one of being the communications manager and making sure that all the kids and grandkids and nieces and nephews and everyone are connected. So it's something she's practiced and learned over time. It's not employment. She's digitally literate to the extent she needs to be to fulfill the work that she does and the role she has in the family. So digital literacy is not only about employment, decent jobs, and entrepreneurship. It's a part of understanding how the digital is tied to all forms of communication now.
So the UNESCO definition leaves out the ways that seniors, especially the ones who are retired and not working, need to communicate. But excluding people based on age is ageism.
And one of the great myths of digital ageism is that younger adults understand what they're doing when they use digital tools, and that older adults don't, and that older adults as well have no interest or desire to learn how to engage in the digital world.
For researchers like Kim working on these issues, they use a specific term for this kind of exclusion, digital ageism.
Digital ageism can be about the way that information on older adults circulates through digital means now. When I turned 55, I started to be targeted with all kinds of stuff that wanted to sell me crap on, you know, fixing my bunions or losing weight or fixing my sagging jowls. So that's an example of how ageism and the digital world is tied through algorithms that target us because we hit a certain age and suddenly, boom. Often in Quebec, especially now, we don't use the word abuse, but I use it because people understand what we mean clearly. But we would talk about older adult mistreatment, and mistreatment can be everything from neglect to physical abuse, to sexual abuse, to financial expropriation of older adults. But ageism can be about the denial of services. So it can be systemic, but it also can be individual, the way that we treat people as stupid if they become a certain age and are assumed to not be able to learn, or we don't have the skills to understand older adults' learning styles, or we don't have an understanding of the other ways that they may not be able to engage productively, fruitfully, and with joy in the digital world rather than with stress.
In the last few weeks, we've seen two disastrous effects. How our infrastructure and care systems fail older people. As of right now, at the end of April, almost half of the deaths resulting from COVID-19 have taken place in long-term care homes in Canada. In fact, the coroner's office in Quebec has launched an inquiry into the deaths at the Heron residence, a private residential long-term care facility. I asked Kim how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting the seniors that she works with.
So it's in this moment of isolation that we see the divides that are age-related. You know, for example, in Quebec, there's a large proportion who are not regular users of the internet. Throw into that equation a crisis like we're having now, with everything moving online, and you have a recipe for social isolation and communication disaster. And again, what seems to be happening is people are saying, well, here, what technology can we develop that would be useful right now to help people be not socially isolated? And it's like, wait a minute, why do you care now? And also, like we see with a ventilator, you can't just put a device in a location and say to people, here's the device. Behind every technology are people who are trained in how to use it, how to maintain it, and to understand, you know, what its function might be in a given context. So in the same way, there's no magic bullet or magic pill or magic technology that's going to solve these problems. We have to think about this as something to remember after this is over and ask ourselves, I hope we still care. And if we still care, then we need to fund not just digital literacy projects, but understand how to deliver those projects in a meaningful way to older adults without shoving technologies down their throats.
But what needs to happen so that seniors can get online in a way that works for them?
First thing is we need to lower the cost of access to the internet in this country, and we need to lower the cost of data access through on mobile technologies. We need to also get rid of exorbitant, punitive fees for data overages when you use your cell phone. And we need to provide access to people in their post-retirement years to these technologies and devices. That's one thing. Everything is going rapidly online right now. And if you don't have that access, either because you don't have the device, because you can't afford the service, you can't just get a device or a technology in a pandemic and be expected to learn how to use it. So we need to think about how digital communications may be ever more important for preventative purposes, almost preventative health purposes in the future. We need to understand that communications and access to the digital world is an increasing important aspect of being able to be a citizen. And if we value citizenship, if we value universal health care, if health care is increasingly tied to access to the digital world, we have to think about the universal right of digital access in this country. And that's a policy decision, not an individual decision. So we need to tackle both the systemic issues, the policy issues, and also individual barriers to access. But we do not need to blame older people for just not knowing. As one interviewee said to me, just because you're older doesn't mean you're stupid.
We were lucky to get a hold of Kim when we did. She has been very busy since the pandemic started, working with students and community organizations to figure out how to get seniors food and other essential services during the lockdown. In addition to this, her team has been teaching seniors how to use communications platforms such as Zoom. One of the groups that she works with came up with something very creative. They're called RECA, or Respecting Elder Communities Against Abuse. They've been putting together a choir. The choir was something that had been planned to be in person, but they quickly worked to make sure everyone could stay at home but still sing along. My producer Ellie and I were lucky to join one of their first online choir rehearsals. On a Thursday morning this April, we logged onto Zoom with about 16 seniors and their choir director, Dina.
My name is Dina, and I am the RECA choir director. And here we are on our second Zoom meeting doing RECA choir virtually. Sorry, I now also get a little ding-dong doorbell sound whenever someone's in the waiting room waiting to be allowed in to the meeting. So I'm just admitting Sajida, there we go. Oh, Louise.
I'm not sure if you can hear me, Dina.
Yes.
Yeah,
we can. Yeah, we can all hear you, Judy.
Okay, good.
Hello.
So we'll begin just to get our bodies ready, and we'll pull our shoulders back and down. If you'd like a little face massage, feels good. Particularly now when we're being told not to touch our faces. Does that sound okay for everyone? Here you are. We are going. Heaven knows where we are going. We'll know we're there. Does anyone like to sing it again once on their own? Not on your own. We are singing with you in spirit, all off in our own homes.
Sure, we can do a duet again.
We are going. Heaven knows where we are going.
I really love to see you guys, see all your faces, hear all your voices. I really enjoyed it.
Knows how we will get there. We know we will.
My friends, they refuse to use a computer. They don't want to hear anything about computer or anything like that.
Muddy and rough, but we'll get there. Heaven knows how we will get there.
These days, I am doing meditation 3 times a day. Then I spend time with my grandchildren. When you look out, I see a squirrel which comes to eat food. I have taken some photographs of that.
We are going. Heaven knows where we are going.
For me, it's a first experience of quarantine. And it's very, very difficult because I am an outside person.
We know we will. It will be hard, we know.
And I'm alone here in this room. I think I know very little about myself, and I need that time alone. And I'm enjoying that. There is a happiness that doesn't depend on anything. And it's beautiful to just know that. And I'm happy to see your faces. I'm happy to sing with you guys. And You know, it's good to be with people, but it's also very good to be with yourself.
Great, thank you. Thank you so much for doing that.
We got to jump into a rehearsal and it was so much fun. It's probably the most fun I've had during this whole thing. It was like singing along with a bunch of friends. It reminded me of a piece of research that said most older adults report feeling decades younger on the inside. And I could see why. There was so much joy and laughter. Anne Keynes is a volunteer coordinator with RECA. In her words, she's not really a computer person. Anne and her fellow choir members don't call themselves seniors. Instead, they use the word elder.
We use the term elder in place of senior because elders, for us, denotes a relationship rather than just a category or a demographic group, seniors. I will be 77 this year.
Anne explained how in Montreal's diverse community of seniors, not everyone speaks the same language. So they use art, tableaus, theaters, flash mobs, a weekly potluck, and yes, a choir. I asked Anne what it's been like for the choir since the pandemic started.
We had just started again this season to sing together, and then we had to stop. We suddenly realized that people were doing things online, and if they were doing things online to see each other, why couldn't we? And now we feel, maybe we can do it. But we just had our first meeting last week, and it was so much fun to see each other and also to work with our choral mistress. She's been very attentive to those who've not been able to get on. Not everybody has a computer that will access video screening, and we're finding that out. They can hear us. They can see us, but we can't see them. And at first, it seems like a challenge that's insurmountable for some of us. And yet we're saying, hey, we're old enough to keep learning. So we're going to do this because we want to see each other.
For Anne and the elders at RECA, being able to join the choir via Zoom helps them feel less isolated. But Anne is pretty clear that right now, during the pandemic, it's not just about having fun.
But I want to just say one thing about accessibility, okay? I do think that we assume everybody is online and we can't. We are online, but there are so many seniors who aren't. And this is where you're talking about a different kind of isolation, where you need human contact. And we're so upset about the percentage of elders who are now dying, and they're dying in residences for long-term care. But apart from that, it's the communication issue too. It's the tangible. And they're saying, why aren't we giving Facebooks? Why can't we see our loved ones? Why can't we use our technology to help connect up those who are isolated and told they cannot leave?
I asked Anne, what are some things about communications technology that worry her?
I did do a presentation to the CRTC saying that, you know, there again, the big companies have contracted salespeople. And they manipulate elder people who don't even understand, who are not given training on their smartphones. And then they find out they owe tons of money because it's a 6 months of a good deal. And after that, you're paying a lot more.
In addition to predatory contracts, for many seniors, getting online presents another challenge in terms of digital literacy skills. For some, learning about the online world can be a scary prospect.
I don't want to generalize because it's not necessarily an age-related issue that we don't know how to function online, because you learn something and you think you're pretty skilled at one aspect of internet or of getting online, and suddenly something changes. And then you have the whole issue of whether you trust things that are coming through. There's so many ways that you can be bombarded with information, misinformation, disinformation, and, for instance, social media. Some people are very, very good in our group on social media, and some are totally afraid of it. RECA has a Facebook, but I don't have a Facebook. See, so I've come late, and I still am very wary and nervous about Facebook.
While it's clear getting online is essential, Both Anne and Kim pointed out how, on the flip side, the internet itself poses another risk. There is so much misinformation. There are jokes that are hard to tell apart from facts. There's old news that is hard to tell apart from what's happening now, and videos and quotes taken completely out of context. And of course, there are the outright lies, propaganda, and predatory scams. That's what author and journalist Craig Silverman spends his time looking into.
I'm Craig Silverman, and I'm the media editor of BuzzFeed News.
Early last year, Craig and a bunch of other reporters from BuzzFeed published a series of stories for something they called, quote, Protect Your Parents from the Internet Week, end quote. Of course, there were stories like one headlined, 32 times parents shared too much information about their kids on social media, end quote. But there was also an advice piece by Craig on what to do when the seniors in your life start sharing fake or extreme content. I asked Craig why he started looking into this.
For me, the issue of any connection with, you know, generations and misinformation and disinformation, it's something that I was sort of watching for a while, but the impetus for me to really look at it came in about early 2019, a bunch of different research, independent research about different social platforms, about Twitter, about Facebook. They all started coming out and they all actually started showing the same thing, that people over 65 seemed to be struggling a bit more than others. And they seemed to have a tough time distinguishing between credible news and news from, you know, really uncredible sources or completely false claims, as well as not necessarily having a good grounding in the role that algorithms play in helping determine what news we're seeing and information we're receiving. And so there seems to be this kind of generational issue. And that's not to say that no one else struggles. I think we all do to a certain extent. But part of it was just that people over 65 seems to be a group who are struggling a bit more. And, you know, for me, I've always been a little bit hesitant to try and point out and say, you know, this group is really more susceptible or that group is more susceptible. Because the truth is, all of us in the right circumstances can fall for misinformation or disinformation.
Craig is right. Any of us can fall for misinformation. But in his reporting, Craig has found that there are a few elements in society that make that trap even more dangerous for seniors. I asked him what those are.
In the past, you often had a lot of multi-generational households. Increasingly now, you don't have people over 65 living with younger generations. And so the internet is often a way that the generations are connecting to each other. So that, in a sense, you know, you would think gives the motivation for folks who are a little bit older to kind of get online. But what's happening is that, you know, they have a natural hesitation to it. In many cases, folks who are older 65 now, especially people who are, you know, just over 65, you know, they've been using computers and the internet probably for a long time in their jobs, depending on what they do. But the reality is, once you kind of start to step back, once you either slow down or you fully retire, you're just not as connected to what's going on. And technology moves really fast. And so there's some hesitancy and sometimes even some embarrassment about having to, like, get on and, okay, how do I learn to FaceTime and that kind of thing. So that's one piece. They're not using it regularly as part of a job in many cases. And so they become a little bit, you know, out of practice. That can lead to some embarrassment where they don't really want to have to deal with it and struggle in front of others. You know, the other piece is a certain degree of loneliness that often happens. If you are a person over 65, maybe you've lost your partner and you're living alone, there is a sense of isolation and loneliness that wasn't there for previous generations because, again, they often lived with the younger generations in a house. And so that kind of sense of isolation and loneliness in some ways leads people to spend more time online. But if they haven't been given the grounding in how to do it, that's where they sort of fall prey to people who are, you know, pitching scams, fall prey to malware and these kinds of things. And then the other thing that's really hard to talk about, and of course doesn't affect everyone over 65, but sometimes there is some cognitive decline that we all will face the older we get. And so if you combine someone who maybe is dealing with some of that and also having potentially people targeting them for scams and other things, that can certainly lead to a really bad scenario.
I think that's something most of us can relate to, you know, falling for disinformation or feeling behind the curve. I mean, I refuse to, for example, learn TikTok, but if that suddenly became mandatory and that's how everybody communicated, I would be well, well behind. And my hope is that there would be people trying to help older people or people in general learn some of these internet skills. Who did you speak to that might be on the forefront of this?
you're right that, you know, there are new technologies and new services that come along that even somebody in their late 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s may start to feel a little bit of out of touch. So it's not like this is the only group of people facing this. However, one of the things we've seen since 2016 is that a lot of the effort and investment that's been going into kind of helping people with news literacy, helping people with technological literacy to combat misinformation, that's often targeting people in school age. So you have, you know, elementary, junior high, high school, you have some courses at the university level. All of a sudden, there's funding, there's resources, there's programs for them, but not as much for people over 65. And the folks who are trying to fill that gap, one, are definitely our public libraries. You're seeing libraries starting to come up with programs where they're trying to, you know, bring in experts to do internet security sessions, to do news literacy sessions. And so I think we're seeing some of the kind of, you know, organizations, community organizations and other types of organizations that are focused on older age groups trying to help. You're seeing libraries trying to step in. The one gap that I think is still there is that in a lot of cases, these are focused on teaching them how to use devices and specific technologies. And then, you know, they get them online, but there's, of course, the next level of, well, once you're online, how do you kind of determine what information you're seeing, and how do you know whether you're being targeted with a scam or something like that? And that's a piece that I think we still need to have a lot more focus and investment on.
It strikes me that right now you and I are talking from, I think, week 3 of a lockdown related to the coronavirus pandemic, and health is always an area where there's quite a bit of misinformation. What have you seen around what older people are sharing or thinking about or wondering about when it comes to being online and wondering about their health during the pandemic?
You know, as we're talking right now, I'm in the midst of an investigation into scammy emails and products that are really absolutely targeting people in older demographics to get them to buy overpriced masks, to get them to buy overpriced, you know, sanitizer wipes, to get them to buy things called miracle immunity oil. I'm not making that up. That's literally, you know, how they're describing it in some of these emails. And from the data we've been gathering, I mean, there are millions of people, primarily older folks, who are being targeted with these emails, and you know they're going to lose potentially hundreds of dollars buying products that may give them a false sense of security. And so I think there is a risk around that. And of course, people across age groups have been sharing some really bad information related to the coronavirus. You know, this one piece of advice that you know, if you drink hot liquids that can help kill the virus, and if you drink consistently, you know, just completely not credible. But that's something that I've seen people of all age groups sharing. And if you are, of course, an older person and you know you're more susceptible, you know you're in an at-risk group, you're going to want as much, you know, defense as you can get. And so that's why they're susceptible to, you know, the sort of loopy false medications and masks and other things, because they are worried and they have reason to be worried.
So what do you do when you see an older person sharing misinformation? It's a tough one. Like Craig said, there are issues of loneliness and fear that are specific to older adults. What are you supposed to say when an aunt who normally sends Bible quotes starts posting chain messages about buying gold or drinking silver water to stop the coronavirus? I asked Craig what he would recommend.
This is a thing that I think all of us are confronting in our lives. And it comes up in specific cases, like with the coronavirus, obviously family WhatsApp groups or family chats. You might have someone who's putting stuff out there that's not very credible, but it's happening in so many different contexts. And the first thing I think people should keep in mind is, especially if this is someone sharing this stuff that you have a relationship with, is it, rather than get in the group and shame them there or confront them there, you want to think about, you know, how can I reach out to them one-on-one? If there's somebody literally in your household, have that in-person conversation. So be personal. Contact with them one-on-one, be non-confrontational, give them the opportunity to make it really easy to say, oh, geez, you know, I didn't realize that was incorrect or what have you. You know, maybe they're not super connected to that thing they shared, and maybe they'd be willing to kind of let it go. Because the truth is, if you seem to be attacking them and if you seem to be a know-it-all, people may really dismiss you even if your information is good. So it is a delicate thing. If you're going to share contradictory information to something somebody already put out, and you're hoping they might change their mind, think about choosing a source that you think they may consider to be credible. If you can find something from another news website that shares that same kind of ideological leaning, but that contradicts what they shared, maybe they're more willing to believe that than something they see coming from the other side. So you have to be kind of strategic about it.
That's pretty practical advice. Since I spoke to Craig, I've been trying it in my family group chats with my older relatives, and it has had some small effect. But I wanted to know what else needs to be done to help seniors not fall prey to scams and misinformation.
If all of us make an effort to share more quality information, if all of us make an effort to educate ourselves, then that might actually reduce some of the supply that folks from all age groups are seeing. And so there is a kind of collective responsibility in this. We shouldn't blame one age group or put it all on one age group. We should all think about how we as individuals can all contribute to a society where, you know, ideas can flow, where free speech can flow, but also where people aren't being rewarded and encouraged for stuff that is false and misleading or deliberately riling people up. And I think the other piece here is, law enforcement also, in terms of the elder scams and in terms of other things that are absolutely targeting older people, they need to step up education and enforcement as well to help kind of support these other types of literacy efforts.
Aging is inevitable, but being excluded is not. In our increasingly connected world, older people are often being left behind. As Craig said, programs and funding for digital literacy and safety are largely aimed at younger people. This means that while our elders are targets, they are also ignored. We learned from Kim and from Anne and the Rec Choir that there are people working hard to make sure seniors are part of our digital future. They pointed out how it's community organizations and public libraries who are really doing this heavy lifting. But communications companies and policymakers have a part to play in this too. The SDGs are all about looking forward, but to make sure we meet their goals, we also have to include seniors in our collective futures. I'm Vicky Machama, and this has been No Little Plans, a podcast from Community Foundations of Canada. Our producers are Ellen Payne-Smith and Jay Coburn. Our executive producer is Katie Jensen, and our music is by Elcon. The show is a project of Strategic Content Labs, Canada's content marketing consultancy. If you want to learn more about the SDGs, go to alliance2030.ca. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, subscribe, and share, as it helps other people find the show. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at No Little Podcast. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts, and join us as we look at the big plan to reshape the world.